You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, Ron, it is our last night of our European vacation. I'm enjoying my European cappuccino.
And I'm having my cafe Americano.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful night, another beautiful night in the center of Florence, Italy, right across from the Baptisti and the Medici family.
Yes. Yep. It's been pretty warm while we've been here, which I guess is unseasonably warm, I guess you would say.
And the Arno River, which separates north and south Florence, is way down and real consistent with the problems that we had on the Rhine River during our river cruise.
Yes. Well, but anyway, I'm glad that it didn't rain during our whole trip. And we enjoyed it immensely. So I'm going to be sad to go home, but yet happy to go home, get back to work, get back to see the Desi dog, and kind of life as normal.
Well, back at the ranch, and it's been raining almost every single day since we've got, you know, since we got on vacation. And we've even got some flooding, but not on our property, they're telling us. So that's great, and the kids are taking good care of the place.
Yeah. Well, and I guess it's also been very warm in the United States in the regards of Brett Kavanaugh.
As a matter of fact, it's been muy caldo in Washington, D.C., because they're running this poor guy ragged. I feel so bad for Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh and his poor family for having to go through this.
Well, I do too, and I really have, you know, quite a lot of thoughts about it. This is the typical Democratic October surprise type of thing that they do. And they pull this in every single election. And we should know it by now. And I do think that we know it by now. And I think that they were prepared, but I don't think that they were. See, because the new in thing now is the Me Too movement. So this is what they're using. It's whatever the flavor of the day is at the time of the election, Ron, that they pull out of their cap. And here you have now not just one woman, but two women who have things to say and nothing to back it up. The allegations are 35 years old, so that there can be no confirmation of them. It's a he said, she said, and this is by design. I absolutely believe that. And, you know, I'm a firm believer with women, Ron, that first of all, let me just say to you that I don't believe either of these accusations, not one iota of them. And the media has been too polite to call these people liars, but I'm pretty close to doing that right now because I don't believe that any of this is true. Secondly, I do believe that if women put themselves in positions that these two women said that they did at young ages of 15 and whatever the second girl was, getting drunk and acting a fool at a party, then I don't say that they get what they deserve, but I do say that they are creating a situation that puts them at risk and other people at risk, and the victim is not always as innocent as we would like to think that they are.
Well, you know me, the Joe Friday of forensics, so you know just the facts, nothing but the facts. And the first thing I want to say, honey, is that, you know, you think that the Democratic Party reached, you know, lows when they nominated Clarence Thomas to the bench. Well, these are far beyond what happened to poor Supreme Court Judge Thomas at that time when he was a nominee. So we've got a couple of accusations from Christine Blasey Ford and a new girl that just came up. She's a woman. She's 53 years old. She was a girl at the time, Deborah Ramirez. And like you said, none of these things are substantiated. But let's just kind of take a look at it fact-wise. First of all, everybody's all screwed up, and they're demanding an FBI investigation. That's out of the jurisdiction of the FBI, okay? Unless it's proven that someone goes to Congress and lies in front of Congress, which has not been determined whatsoever. So there's no jurisdiction there. The jurisdiction would be 35 to 40 years ago when these alleged sexual activities, because they are not sexual assaults, even by the description of the women, at best it's an assault, at worst it's nothing. And the agencies that these actions allegedly had taken place in, those are the investigating agencies. So we're far beyond the statute of limitations. All of that cast aside, I just look at how these women have changed their mind repeatedly. There is absolutely not a single shred of evidence, like on my show, that any of this occurred. Nobody is supporting anybody with respect to the allegations that these women are making. And they are completely confused in what they're doing. So how can anybody carry on any type of valid forensic investigation under those circumstances? And apparently the only person that kept records of his whereabouts at the time is Brent Kavanaugh, and he has supplied his 1982 calendar, and which shows pretty much what he was doing almost every single day during the weekends, when he had games, when he was practicing, when he was going out, when he was staying with his parents at the beach, you know, because they had a beach house apparently. And, you know, Christine Ford has nothing. Deborah Ramirez has nothing. And as a matter of fact, other people are that these people have named that were allegedly there are saying that they weren't there and or nothing happened whatsoever.
Right. And even worse things have come out about the so-called victims here. And, you know, I mean, we can talk about that or not talk about that. But it's, you know, the thing is that this is just predictable anymore. And the Democrats have said from day one that they were going to do whatever they needed to do to not let Brett Kavanaugh be our Supreme Court justice. So this is the road that they choose to take. Dianne Feinstein was despicable in what she did. And let's talk about the letter that she received, that she would not return unredacted to let other people see. But now apparently she has. And guess what? The fonts don't match in the letter. So the sentence where she identifies her so-called abuser is a completely different font than the rest of the letter. How interesting is that?
Well, honey, I got an opportunity to take a look at it on my laptop, and even I could tell with the naked eye that the first sentence in the second paragraph that identified Kavanaugh was a completely different font. I don't know how you can get away with something like that.
Well, I don't know. You'd think that they'd be smarter than that, but obviously they're not. You know, the thing that's really disturbing about this, Ron, is here's a man who has led an exemplary career. Exemplary. And he gets nominated for this job. And because of the ugly atmosphere of the politics in our country right now, the partisan politics, these people think nothing of taking a man who's had an exemplary career, who has given his career to the betterment of our judicial system and ruining his reputation, threatening not only his Supreme Court job, but don't forget that this could also hurt him, say that he didn't get picked to be on the Supreme Court in his current job. So, and his family and his two daughters, you know, who have to listen to this at school.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because that's what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the fact that this puts an absolutely horrible strain on the relationship between he and his wife. She seems to be such a lovely woman. But the kids, And, you know, I did a show on a threat of evidence, you know, where we dealt with cyberbullying and, you know, and bullying in schools and things like that. And I feel so bad for those two young daughters because you know how cruel kids are.
Sure.
And they're going to have to put up with that. I mean, people don't even think about the humanity when they get involved in such, you know, scurrilous activity. So, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Christine Ford at one time in her life didn't have some sort of negative sexual experience, or even Deborah Ramirez. But the big question is, was that experience with Brett Kavanaugh or somebody else? Because both these women admit to just being drunk off their butts. They didn't know what day it was, where they were, who they were with, what time they got there, what time they left, how they ended up leaving, what state of affairs they found themselves in. Can you imagine as a detective trying to interview somebody, you know, that makes a complaint about a sexual assault and then having to interview them in that manner?
Well, I've done that, and I believe you probably have as well.
Oh,
and
quite a few times.
Yeah, and you, yeah. It's just impossible. But the thing here that we have to look at is the political motivation, because neither of these people for 35 years have spoken up about their huge problem with Brett Kavanaugh, despite the fact that he has gone through a number of different, you know, very high profile career jobs. And all of a sudden, when he is going to be on the Supreme Court, all of a sudden this all comes out. This is just too convenient. All of the things that, if you put all of these pieces together, Ron, it's just too convenient. And sometimes when people can't remember things, it's because they're not telling the truth. And it's hard to keep your story straight. If you are telling the truth, it's pretty easy to keep your story straight because you have one story. But when you're not telling the truth, it's pretty hard to keep all the facts straight because you don't even remember what you've said and what you haven't said. So this, to me, is nothing but a political ploy. And two women who really got wrapped up in this by people that want to use them to get their way politically. And this is a mess, and it should never happen in this country. I will tell you that being in Europe and hearing this is distressing. It's what they hear over there about our country, and it's pretty ugly from being, you know, far away and hearing this.
Well, you know, I mean, we're in Italy, and so you know, they've had their picadillos. You know, all of the politicians,
yes,
in Italy have had their picadillos.
Have.
As a matter of fact, one of the prime ministers of Italy, oh, I don't know, two or three terms back, had to leave office for exactly, you know, for that, having an affair.
Well, but he was having
but
an affair.
Was.
That's the difference.
He was. And she was pretty cute, too. And but that's, you know, that's the Italian way, where, you know, you have a lot of people that have mistresses. It's just a different, a little bit of a different culture than in the United States. And they take it differently there. But we're not talking about affairs here. What we're talking about are serious allegations of sexual impropriety and sexual assault. And that's why this is so serious. But and I have, as a detective, I have to question motive. I mean, every detective questions motive. Why would somebody come forward at this time after being silent for 35 years? I always keep an open mind, but I think that an investigation, as I've said many times, is a search for the truth, and you go wherever the evidence takes you, no matter where it takes you, and you have to make decisions at the end of the day when that investigation is concluded. The detective or the district attorney or a trier of fact has got to make a decision as to whether something had occurred or not. So far, I will say, based on everything that I've heard or read while we've been here in Europe, is that it wouldn't even constitute a preponderance of evidence, let alone guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And we're just going to have to let the trier of fact, who's going to be those senators, make that decision as to whether they're going to confirm Brett Kavanaugh or not.
Well, and we are going to have to let that happen. But what I am also disappointed in is that the Republican side has, you know, they've given in to this woman and allowed for delays and allowed her to pick the time and how she's going to testify and who can be in the room and all of these things. And this is just baloney. I mean, we are kowtowing to political backstabbing here, and that's what we're doing. And we are risking the future of our Supreme Court over it. Then I want to say something else about this whole situation, and I've written about it as far as women and all of these Me Too complaints. Listen, there are plenty of women, and I certainly was on the end of the job where I heard from plenty of women who were really, really sexually assaulted, and that should never happen. But we've gone so far over the edge of two things in this country that are very disturbing to me. One is, you know, kind of boys will be boys kind of thing. And I'm not saying that they should sexually assault people, but men and women throughout history, throughout time, have a little kind of dance that they do with one another. And some of it is sexual. It just is. And we've gone so far the other way that we're making our two sexes, male and female, afraid to have anything to do with each other for fear of being accused of something. And I think that that's a tragedy. I think that part of the joy of living is the whole interaction between men and women. And women have a lot to say, Ron, about how that interaction goes or doesn't go by their behavior. So I think that we've just gone too far. And the other thing that we are way too far on is all of these people who have come out and said, I support this woman, I believe her, I support her. Really? I mean, based on what? How do you even say that? That's just plain stupid, and that is ridiculous.
Well, you know, honey, I will join with you there. You know, one of the people that came out of the woodwork was Patty Davis, who's the late President Ronald Reagan's daughter. And she says, well, you know, I was a victim of a sexual assault, you know, many, many, many years ago, and or an attempted sexual assault with a producer when she was in the music industry. And she said, you know, he invited me over to his place. It was late at night. And then as soon as I got there, he pulled out some cocaine, a vial of coke, and was starting to cut it up. And she said, you know, I'm 90% sure that I didn't do the coke with him. Okay. 90% sure. Okay. And, you know, that's, to me, that just typified everything that's been happening with these particular allegations, okay? You know what? If you took cocaine, I don't care if it was 50 years ago, you would remember taking cocaine, unless you took so much coke during your life that you couldn't remember whether that particular time you took coke or not. But that's just the analogy I wanted to bring up, and you're going to see a lot more weirdos come out of the woodwork. And let's just let this thing play out, and we'll see what happens.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, you know, I was reading in MSN Money an article about six things that Americans still have to pay for that people in other European countries don't have to pay for. And I wanted to go over those with you and get your thoughts on these.
Well, don't we always have to pay for something? I mean, nothing's free.
The government in these countries pays for these services where we still don't. And the article implies that we should be paying for these things as a country. And my opinion is that if we pay for these things we're going to talk about, we may as well just be a socialist country. So I want to go over them with you and see what your thoughts are.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so the first one that people in America still have to pay on their own, for the most part, because not all really at all, is college tuition.
Okay, so let's just be real specific about it, because community college is tax supported.
Right.
All right. State colleges are tax supported, but parents in this country pay for sending kids to state universities, state colleges, and obviously private universities.
Well, the article had said that since the 1980s, college tuition has more than doubled, and the average that students are racking up in loans is about $17,000. Now, what I have to say about that is that a lot of the money in the school systems, especially in the universities, is absolutely wasted. The money is not well spent. It is used for things that are frivolous and for people enjoying, conferences here and there and lots of giveaways and just all kinds of interesting things that are not helping the kids' education.
Well, how many times, you know, when I was a division dean, how many times did I tell you about all the waste and actually corruption at the college level and how disgusted I was by the whole thing? And when I, in my budget, tried to actually save money by doing some voluntary things and trying to get needed, you know, equipment and things. And of course, I was teaching in a law enforcement program, in a criminal justice program, how much pushback and actually in trouble I got for trying to save money.
Right, because they want one hand to feed the other. And the other reason that they charge so much tuition, Ron, is because of all of their retirement plans.
Well, and also don't forget that, and I don't know if a lot of people know that, but university professors and college professors, every 7 years, they're allowed to go on sabbatical for an entire year that is paid for by the taxpayer,
yeah.
Unless it's a private, you know, university or college. They get to go away and do, you know, so-called research during an entire year on sabbatical, and that's all supported by taxpayers.
Well, in other countries like Germany, the Czech Republic, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Finland, they offer free college. Of course, it's never free, which is going to be my point at the end of all of this.
Okay,
so,
college
is one of them. Number two, health care. And certainly that's a big debate in this country about, is it a right or is it your responsibility? It is said that we are the only industrialized country that doesn't offer free universal health care. Again, health care is never free. So, you know, what's your thought on the health care issue?
Well, let's just, you know, we've done one of our shows here in Europe. I think when we were on the river cruise boat, and we talked about health care in our discussions with people in Germany and Austria, and they pay for, those countries pay for health care for their citizens. But if you're there on visa, if you're an illegal alien, if you are not a citizen of Austria or Germany, you got to pay for health care on your own. And I thought our driver in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, well, I think we asked him that question, and I think he said the same thing. I think if you're not a citizen in the Netherlands, you have to pay for your own health care. They're not paying for health care for aliens there.
Well, and that's interesting that you say that, because that is something that we're doing, even though we're not paying for it for our citizens. But, I think that by giving people universal health care, first of all, it has to be paid for. So it has to be paid for in the taxes. And all of these countries have higher taxes. But also, they don't really get choices. So in America, we get choices about our doctors and choices about our healthcare and choices about where we go and what services we receive. And when you receive a universal healthcare that the government provides, you don't get those choices. And the government can not give you services that you may need. They make those decisions, and I'm not for that myself.
Well, you know, Linda, let me just disagree with you on one thing. And just remind you that, you know, those people in the United States that have paid into Medicare their entire life and then become senior citizens of an age where they can now enjoy, so to speak, Medicare, they can't really pick their own doctors, because there's a lot of doctors, and this is very frustrating for those people, there's a lot of doctors out there that don't accept Medicare.
Well, you're absolutely right, and it's not so much that they don't accept Medicare, it's that they say that they are not taking any new patients. So the trick with Medicare is that you have to have a doctor, and that is your doctor before you ever get on Medicare, and then that doctor has to keep you. But if you are on Medicare and say that you move and you want to see somebody in your new area, they don't have to take you. So that is a real problem with that. And
well,
yes,
don't you think that that's a ripoff for all those people that are paying all along? And as a matter of fact, illegal aliens, especially in California, can get, you know, free health services. And basically, when you get free health services and you just go into a hospital, you can go into the hospital of your choice and they have to accept you. So isn't that like getting your own doctor?
Well, they actually have better health care than do our elders in this country.
Our senior
and
citizens.
Yes,
sure.
Our
veterans.
That's a crime. That's a crime. But anyway, do I think that we should all have universal health care? I actually don't think so. I think that the system is broken and seriously needs to be fixed. And I'm not the person that knows how to fix everything about it. But I don't think that the universal health care is the answer.
No, you know, I'm going to agree with you. I am going to say, and I think you do agree with me on this, that we do have a segment of our population that are just so poor that they can't afford even basic health services. And I think there should be a program for that very small segment of the population that are so poor, so indigent, that they can't afford to have basic health care. And I think that just for health purposes, those people need to have that type of program, and it should be subsidized. But you know me, I'm just like you, totally against illegal aliens coming into this country and getting anything for free.
Yeah, I am right there with you. The next thing that and by the way, let me just tell you that, of course, you know that a lot of the countries that we know have socialized medicine, so I won't even mention countries' names here. But the next thing that other countries seem to provide, which is really interesting to me, they provide vacations for employees. So in America, businesses voluntarily provide paid vacation leave, right? We're not forced to. It's voluntary.
Well, that's what we do with our companies. We give our employees, depending on seniority, a certain amount of vacation time, and that's paid vacation time. But in Europe, those people can take off for weeks on end and get paid vacation. Let me remind you about bankrupt Greece, and they are paying their people.
And Greece is one of them.
Oh, okay. Thank you for telling me that, because I remember the big brouhaha, because I think people in Greece get like 6 weeks of paid vacation, and there was literally a riot a few years ago when they tried to take away one of those weeks of vacation. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Big riot in Athens over that. Okay, well, geez. You're losing out of your 6 weeks of vacation. We just want you to have 5 weeks. And it was total chaos. But you know what? Because Greece is a member of the European Union, it isn't just Greece that takes the hit. It's the entire EU, because they have to subsidize Greece because they're a member of the EU.
Well, and a lot of countries do have national paid leave policy. So, for an example, the UK gives you 28 days of paid leave, and Denmark gives 25 days annually of paid leave. And I know this is, again, this is not something that I would suggest. Now, anybody has the option in this country when they go to apply for a job to look at what the employer offers and make a decision for their own future.
Hey,
right?
Let me ask you a question. Is Italy in your list there? Because I really like it here, and I could do with 4 or 5 weeks of paid vacation.
No, it does not give a full list.
Darn.
But paid vacation is not something that is required nationally. Next is parental leave, and a lot of states are going to this, that you have to supply parental leave. So I kind of disagree with this article in that, you know, yes, we don't do this on a national level, but we certainly do it on a state by state.
Well, I think Jerry Brown put together You're interrupting me on Jerry Brown, Linda. Stop it. But I think Jerry Brown recently threw on the table considering having the state of California doing 6 weeks of maternity leave. And that's for everybody, right? Men, women,
right?
Everybody.
Absolutely. Well, and so some of the European countries, again, Greece, Bulgaria, the UK, Slovakia, Croatia, they have national paid maternity leaves. New Zealand has a paid parental leave of 22 weeks.
But 22
weeks? Right. But the U.S. does not have a national policy. It varies by employer to employer.
Okay, well, I want to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. You may not know the answer, so I don't want to put you on the spot, sweetheart, but if these people are working for a private company, and they take off for vacation, is it the company that pays for that vacation, or is it the government that pays for the vacation and subsidizes the company? I'm trying to follow that.
I do not know the answer to that. That would be something interesting to find
Dr.
out.
Oh, Dr. Ron stumps Linda.
I am stumped. I don't know the answer to that. But these are national policies. And you may have the answer at the end of this. So let me go through the next one. And some of these I'm incredulous, but our country does not pay for baby items for you.
What does that mean? What's a baby item?
Well, some countries get a cardboard box from the government, and it serves as a bassinet. Isn't that great? And it includes baby essentials like a sleeping pad and bathing products and diapers and some bedding and those types of things. So,
is this part of this whole European cradle to grave type of thing where they're taking care of people? I mean, I think that's ludicrous.
You know, and it's interesting because what the article said was in the U.S., expectant mothers need to shop for those items themselves. Oh, my gosh. You know.
What a concept.
Yeah, what a concept to do something for yourself. Okay, and then the last thing that people in our country don't do is, unless you're a private company and you choose to do it, is we don't pay for people's daycare for their children. So the average cost of enrolling a child in full-time daycare is about $10,000 a year.
That sounds about right.
In other countries like Denmark, Iceland, Luxembourg, Norway, and Sweden. And by the way, those countries I just mentioned, the Nordic kind of countries, mm-hmm. they're very big on all of these giveaways. So they will pay for daycare, 75% of child care, and even more for lower class families. So what the article basically is saying that, you know, we're not up to speed with Europe. And here's what else we're not up to speed with Europe, Ron. What do you think that people pay in these countries in their taxes that get these services?
Well, you know, you didn't mention France, but I think France's tax rate is like 70 to 75%. But I know that classically European countries have much higher tax rates than we do in the United States. So go ahead and fill me in. Do you know what the Nordic countries are paying in taxes?
It's around 65%.
Wow. Again, I just can't even wrap my arms around paying 65% in taxes. You and I, with our companies, and they're successful companies, what's our tax? I know it's significant, but it's nothing near 68%.
The tax rate, as it has been 40-something percent. Now, I will also say, beyond the 65% that people are paying, and in some of these countries it is 70%, but beyond that, there's also, on top of that, a corporate tax rate. So the people, out of their paychecks, are paying the 65%, and then the corporations are paying another 22 to 25% as well. So they are getting my point is, nothing is free.
No, and you know what? You just reminded me of something that they do in Europe that we don't do in the United States, and it's called the VAT.
They also do the value-added tax.
That's right, the VAT.
Yes.
And we don't have that. And that's a scheme in and of itself, where you're taxing the person for the product at every step of the production of the product. Am I right? Because
yeah.
That's your area.
Yes.
You know, you deal internationally with products. Isn't that what the VAT is?
Yes, and I was reading that actually just today, and I don't remember the exact figure, but I want to say it was another like 25%. So all of these programs, the point is, are not free. And when you have people leaning towards socialism in our country, it is a disaster. And it's not working. It's not working anywhere in the world. And it is not free. And these services cost a lot of money.
And I think, just finally, when these politicians like Ocasio-Cortez throw
yes.
out things, well, we're going to do free education like Bernie Sanders did. You know, we're going to do free education. We're going to do free this, free that. Nothing is ever free.
Well, I did see today that she is going to be debating her professor. So I'm really interested to see that. I will look forward to it.
I'm going to be a fly on the wall for that
okay.
as well. How about another cup of coffee?
You got it.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar, or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Oh, gee, sweetheart, as we draw this wonderful vacation to a close, isn't it just amazing to look out over the windows of this palatial flat that we're staying at and look out over the Baptista and one block down the road to the El Duomo Cathedral and the piazza there. Just absolutely amazing time that we've had with our friends going all the way through Europe and ending up finally in this beautiful country of Italy.
Well, it has been a really wonderful 3 weeks. It's the longest vacation we've ever taken, which it does seem like a really long time right now. And I'm looking forward to going home, but you know, I've enjoyed every minute of it, and we'll have the memories forever. And I learned a lot of things while I was here too, which just makes it that much more enjoyable.
Well, you know, that's one of the fun things that I like about you when you and I travel together, is that with us, it's all about meeting the people and the stories that they have to tell, and then learning something about the countries and the culture, and, you know, what makes these countries tick, or what, you know, doesn't make them tick.
Yeah.
And weren't you surprised to compare and contrast the way that the Italians run things as opposed to how the Austrians run things? Because, you know, Italy is a vibrant country. Certainly Florence is one of the most vibrant countries in Italy. And we see it's just literally, even in September after the kids have gone back to school, it's literally packed with tourists, and there is building going on. But when we are talking with our Italian friends and hosts here, they're telling us that actually Italy's in some serious debt, and they're having some sizable, you know, problems that took years and years to fester, and now these people are really hurting.
Yeah, well, I think Italy will be sad to learn that Florence is a country, Ron, because rather than a city.
And I stand, girl. Well, I'll tell you what, I feel like it's a country. But it should be its own country. But, watch them come early and kick me out of here.
But it's having, you know, you can't see outwardly from our point of view. We don't see the problems because really there's so many people here, so many more people than last time we were here. So I wouldn't have thought that we would have learned what we did about Italy, that they are having significant problems with employment, significant problems with their illegal immigrant situation, people coming into their country that are not supposed to be, and their entitlements.
Well, you know, when we were here in 2015 mm-hmm. with some other friends, we talked with the police at the time. Because you know me, I love to talk with cops
yes.
all over the world and have conversations. And you remember back then we were up in Verona, and the Carabinieri there, which is the sort of the national military police, were telling us about the extensive problems that they were having with illegal aliens coming in from Albania and from Romania and from Libya and Morocco, and all the crime that they were having, but all the debt that they were getting involved in. And that was back in 2015. We come back 3 years later, there's almost twice as many people out here as there were before, because, you know, all of Europe was slightly depressed, just like the United States was.
Yes.
Not doing very well under the Obama administration. And you said very aptly not too long ago, where the United States goes, so goes Europe.
And the Europeans say that themselves.
That's true. And as a matter of fact, remember back in 2015, some people had found out that we were Americans. We were not really appreciated that much because they sort of blamed us for their bad economy.
Yes, that's true. But right now, we don't. You know, I felt nothing but goodwill towards us.
Everybody treated us marvelously.
But it is really an interesting contrast. If you take the countries that we were in, starting with Hungary, Hungary has a thriving economy right now. They are a republic. They are doing very well. Their unemployment is good. They do not have a huge immigration problem into their country right now.
And they built a wall to prevent that from happening?
Yes, a wall. Imagine that. And then the next place that we went was Austria. Austria was probably the most interesting to me as far as their economy was good. And we talked extensively to people there about the Romanians that were coming in to their country, that because in the European Union you can cross any border that you choose to, but they will not give them any entitlements. They will not give them work without a work permit, and then it's limited. And they don't, so they don't do anything to encourage people to stay or to come if they are there illegally.
And, you know, not only that, though, they don't enable the homeless. They don't enable
Correct.
The homeless. They will allow them to beg because, as they said, it's a human right to, I guess, to beg. You know, we could disagree, but it's a human right to beg. But the one thing about Austria is environmentally, it gets pretty cold there, and those homeless people disappear because they just can't survive out on the street. So they go back to wherever they came from, and they earn a living back there, and then they come out during the good times because they said they can make more money when the tourists are there than
sure.
they can in their own countries. And that's why they kind of cross borders all the time and give the Austrians a headache.
But what you also noticed about that country was that there wasn't the preponderance of graffiti as in the other countries, and things were very, very clean there. So it absolutely makes a difference. The next country we went was to Germany, and Germany also, a lot of those little villages all along the Danube and the Rhine are just, you can eat off the ground. They are spotless. They're spick and span. They take very, very good care of their properties.
And you know, and as we've talked about before, the one thing about Europe that is not celebrated, I'm sorry, that is celebrated far more than to the extent that we celebrate things in our country is their history, both good and bad.
Yes.
They learn, as opposed to us, that they want to tear down the statues, they want to revise history, you know, they don't want to hear about our, you know, slavery and our civil war. What they do in Europe is they make sure that everybody remembers the bad times and how to avoid the bad times. Where in the United States, we cover it up, we destroy it, we get rid of it,
well,
we don't talk about it.
We revise the history,
exactly.
We erase it. The other thing that I saw in Germany was there is really a lot of political dissension there because of the policies, because of the immigrants. There was very many, many more Muslims there. There was many more immigrants there. They're flooding in. The face of Germany has changed dramatically.
As Austria, and certainly, look what we see here in Italy. You know, where we, you know, well, just yesterday we went and took a nice tour, and we went to Pisa, where my dad was born and lived, and I lived there, you know, briefly for a short period of time, and we went to San Gimignano, Siena, the Chianti region, and when we were in. When we were in Pisa, remember, we had to walk pretty far from the bus to get to the Leaning Tower,
yes,
and everything.
Yes.
And they had stalls and stalls and stalls of Moroccans selling African items. What does that have to do with Italy or the Leaning Tower of Pisa or the Piazza del Ricordo or the cathedral or anything? It just seems so out of place.
And they have a huge pickpocket problem there,
yeah,
in Pisa, if you go to see the Leaning Tower. But we enjoyed it, and we had a good time. And back to the contrast, though, then we went to Amsterdam, and oh my gosh, that's a little thriving place for sure.
Oh, there's
very busy.
Building all over the, yeah, place, and some fascinating new architecture. You know, I mean, they have their old buildings and, you know, everything that we love, the old architecture. But boy, some of the new architecture they have there was just right off the chart weird. I mean,
yeah,
it was beautiful, but it was weird.
Yeah, it was very different.
Nothing like you see in the States.
No, nothing. No, and, you know, really everything about the Netherlands is different than you see in the States. So it's a very, very free society. There's marijuana smoke in the air everywhere. There's
sex shops. It
seemed sex like, shops,
it seemed,
yeah,
like every other shop was a sex shop or a dope shop.
Yeah, Yeah.
And more bicycles than you've ever seen in your
life.
And
you literally see children smoking marijuana there, which is interesting.
I know. It's crazy. And, of course, you have to have 360-degree situational awareness so you don't get run over by the crazy bicyclists.
Yes.
Okay, but, hey, speaking of crazy, let's talk about traffic in Italy.
Traffic in Italy is crazy. Well, but, you know, they have an excuse.
They're crazy?
They definitely, the drivers, oh my goodness. Their streets are so very narrow, and they're cobblestone. And, I mean, when I say narrow, I mean you can fit a small car through there. Not a big car.
Some of them are only about 12 to 14 feet wide, and you know, you can only get a small car
and
or a motorcycle.
And you have to get pedestrians in there, too. And sometimes, I mean, we literally had to hug up against a wall to not get hit by a car. But it is absolutely, I don't know, one of those games that you play on a video, you know, where you're trying to avoid everything. That's how I felt walking down the streets.
Well, if you don't like your driving, get off the sidewalk.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And in Italy, it is not the people that have the right-of-way, not the pedestrians.
Right. The pedestrians do not have the right-of-way.
They have to get out of the way. And boy, I'll tell you what, when those taxi drivers go down these little tiny narrow streets that have lots of people walking and bicyclists and motorcycles, it's like an impediment coming out of every doorway and driveway that you can imagine. And they're jamming down there so fast, it scares the living daylights
out
of you.
Well, you know, what I thought was really interesting is that they have lines on the roadways, okay? So they do have... Well, they have...
Well, here's nobody paid attention to them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They have lanes on the roadways, but nobody pays any attention to them. And how many times did you see motorcycles... And there was a lot of scooters with women on them going in opposition of traffic. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. Right and left, our bus is going down the roadway because we were on the on and off bus a lot trying to go around Florence. And people would head right for our bus and, wait a minute, this is a one-way road and we're going the right way and you're going the wrong way. This is not going to end well for you.
I cannot believe that we did not see hundreds of just accidents of every type and sort.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, okay.
Did you see any?
No,
wait
a minute.
I didn't see any.
Just hang on.
Okay.
Truth be told, we didn't see a single accident while we were in Italy. Linda, how many ambulances did we see with the lights and sirens on?
Oh, well, there was a number of those.
Every 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, every 2 minutes. They're all over the place. I've never seen so many ambulances in my entire life. And when you go over to the El Duomo in the piazza, did you see that line of like 15 or 20 ambulances parked there?
Well, just that's waiting? Just staging, yeah.
Yeah, staging?
Yeah.
Why? Because, what? Yeah, you'll get the occasional tourists that pass out, but you get a lot more that become hood ornaments with these Italian drivers.
I think that's probably true. The other thing that I did notice in the countries, especially in Italy, was Italy has a significant police presence. They have a number of different types of police.
Five different police agencies, and we were very fortunate because we saw all five of them. It was very, very interesting to see all of them. Usually you'll see the municipal police, you'll see the Carabinieri, which are, as I said, you know, the national military police. Every once in a while, you'll see la Polizia, de Stato, or the state police. But, boy, we saw the finance police, we saw the border patrol, we even saw the penitentiary police out there. Very unusual to see that many.
And they are heavily armed.
Oh, we would call that going heavy. We're talking submachine guns, we're talking about tactical vests and tactical uniforms, and armored vehicles. They are all over the place. I think there was a huge police presence this year than we saw in 2015, and of all the countries we went through, this was by far the most police presence. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, and it's interesting that we complain in our country about our police having their little 9mm, and here we go with...
Oh, yeah, you're talking .308, yeah. You're talking .556, you're talking sub-guns.
I didn't mind it one bit.
No.
I like feeling safe. I like that they mean business and that they're going to take care of something if it happens.
And, you know, we got to, you know me, I just get right into it when I see the cops, and I always brought a lot of tchotchkes for them. And, you know, we were
giving away a lot of flag pins.
My thin blue line pins that you were kind enough to make. And I was going and introducing ourselves and our forensic team that was with us to the various police, and they just couldn't have been as, you know, nicer. And that's the brother or sisterhood of police work, but I was sure glad to see them out there and taking care of business.
Well, this is getting to be a habit, too. So we, both times that we have gone to Italy in the last couple of years, I have come home sick, so I think I'll be going home sick again this time. And I think, I don't know, there's so many people there that they're passing something around through the crowds.
Well,
there.
You know, when we started out on the scenic, Amber, we heard that one lady cough on the first day, and she was coughing all over the place. By the end of the second week that we were on the different cruise ships, we had to go through, you know, two different changes. We were on three different ships because of the low river. Everybody on that ship was coughing, and I was really happy when we flew, once we were in Amsterdam, we flew to Florence, Italy, and I said, okay, we're away from that. And then every once in a while, in the crowds that we, because, you know, you're standing in line, you're doing all the touristy stuff, you're on the on-off bus and everything, you'd hear somebody go, and I go, no!
Yeah, so at least it's on the last day, I'll be fine, but it's just frustrating that it, you know, I couldn't escape it no matter what.
Now, I know you don't like me to talk about food and wine, but what wonderful meals that you and I were privileged to have, and we had some great wine, especially when we went to the Chianti region. So, I know that you're tired, and we've got to get up real early tomorrow morning. I think it's 0400 hours.
0400.
And take the long flight back to the States. So why don't we just say goodnight? You're coughing, so I'm not going to kiss you.
Oh.
I'll just give you a handshake, sweetheart.
Oh, thanks. A handshake instead of a kiss.
And friendly travels and safe travels to us tomorrow.
Okay.